Thanks for listening to this message from the life of St. Bees. We're a church that loves to empower, equip and inspire. And in order to better fulfill this call, we're currently undertaking an audacious church relocation project. Find out more, including how you can take part, at www.goandgrow.london. Thank you, and may this message better help you to live a life full of adventurous faith.
After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who has been born King of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him." When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. When he had called together all the people's chief priests and teachers of the law, he asked them where the Messiah was to be born. "In Bethlehem, in Judea," they replied, "for this is what the prophet has written. But you, Bethlehem, and the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For out of you will come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel." Then Herod called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, "Go and search carefully for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me so that I too may go and worship him." After they had heard the king, they went on their way, and the star they had seen when it rose went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another route.
Thanks, Chris, for our reading from Matthew. I'm feeling all nostalgic, actually, because this is the last candlelit service that we will have in this building. Some of you may know that we're moving as a church. We're moving up onto the North Finchley High Road this summer. And so next Christmas we won't be here. So it's a very special moment, and I'm so glad that you've come and to share it with us. Thinking about the theme of the star, we have this star up above us, up above me. I thought of wearing a helmet, actually, but I'm told that it's safe. The theme of the star, a strange story that we read in the Bible. Friends of ours live just outside Cambridge, in the Cambridgeshire countryside, we were up there one time with them, and they have an amazing thing in their garden. They have a hot tub. And so we were up there, and we were in the hot tub, and it was a beautiful, clear night, it was a time when there was a meteor shower going on, and we were watching these shooting stars going across the sky, and the stars were so bright. I think sometimes we Londoners forget that when you're out in the darkness of the countryside, free from the ubiquitous shine of street lamps, stars shine incredibly brightly. And that's the theme of my talk this evening. But we're going to show a little clip now from the BBC's Nativity. Can we show that? Thank you.
What is it?
Come and see.
Regulus, Saturn and Jupiter are forming a conjunction. A trinity. Jupiter has ringed Regulus 3 times already, and it now moves towards Saturn. Look.
What are you saying, Gaspar?
They will be as one star.
But that's not possible.
I know, but it's happening anyway. This is what we've been waiting for.
For centuries, the Magi have studied the stars. They call us wise men, yet is that all we are? Gatherers of knowledge?
Men who see everything you can't see the nose on their own faces.
For more than 1,000 years, we've waited for this. Generations of Magi, all waiting for this very moment. Yet it comes to us, to this generation. And we betray all who've come before us by arguing amongst ourselves like children.
Are you really saying it will be the star prophesied by Balaam?
See for yourself. Show him the chart.
Less than a year away. If it even exists.
What does Melchior say?
Show him the chart.
Please. Regulus, Jupiter, Saturn, a conjunction, Jerusalem.
I never dreamed it would be in my lifetime. Haven't we always believed this moment will come? Why then are we afraid? The prophecy is clear. A star will come out of Jacob, and a scepter will rise out of Israel. Regulus is the royal star. Jupiter is the planet of kings, and Saturn is the shield of Israel. When they meet, their light will blind the world. Retire to study the chart in detail. Balthazar, you may join me to help clarify your findings. Gaspar, too. You're certain your calculations are correct?
I've checked them 1,000 times. More.
Do you really believe it could be Balaam's star?
What I believe is not important. The prophecy is far more than just a star forming to herald a new king in Israel. Balaam also believed that one day there would be a bridge between heaven and earth, that it would herald not just a king, but a king blessed by God himself.
Okay. Well, we don't know what star it was that the Magi from the East saw. And we probably never will know. These were astrologers, wise men from Persia. They were not kings, but they were held in such high esteem that they had the ear of kings. They were holy men seeking the truth. What did these wise men see? Well, we never know for sure, but there are various theories. And one stands out as possibly credible. In the year 7 BC, there was an extremely rare astrological event. A triple conjunction of Jupiter, Saturn, and Saturn in the constellation of Pisces. And the Magi, whose entire lives were gazing into the heavens, would have had quite a specific meaning for such a thing. According to ancient astrological lore, Jupiter was the king of the gods and the planet associated with kings and leaders. Saturn was the planet of the Jews, ruling over the first hour of the Jewish Sabbath. And Pisces was the sign of the zodiac that was believed to exercise particular influence over the area of Judea and around. The first conjunction took place on the 27th of May, which perhaps we can speculate was when the Magi first saw it and perhaps set out on their journey. Their journey would have been 550 miles around the Fertile Crescent. The second conjunction took place on the 6th of October, perhaps by which time they would have visited Herod and maybe were on their way to Bethlehem. The third conjunction was on the 1st of December. The triple conjunction in Pisces would have signified the dawn of the of a new age of Pisces, and so heralding not just the coming of a Jewish king, but the leader of a whole new age, a new king for a new kingdom. And the key astronomical moment of these conjunctions was what was called the Achronicle Rising. And this was the day when the sun was setting in the west and Jupiter and Saturn were rising in direct opposition in the east. That day occurred on the 15th of September. And on that day, the sun was in the constellation of Virgo. And so horoscope readers would conclude that a baby was to be born in Judea, who would be king of the Jews, who would be king of a new age, a different type of kingdom, and the birth would be described as having the sun in Virgo, or having being the son of a virgin. Now, make of that what you will. Of course, we Christians, we don't believe in astrology. In fact, we consider it to be occult rubbish. And delving into such things is banned by the Bible. But then again, here it is in the Bible with these astrologers stargazing and coming up with this amazing trip to visit Jesus. It messes with all our neat theories. It also messes with our calendar because Jesus would have been born in the year 7 BC and Christmas would have been on the 15th of September. So we've missed it. Psalm 19 states, "The heavens declare the glory of God. The skies proclaim the work of his hands. Day after day they pour forth speech. Night after night they display knowledge." What does it all mean? Well, it turns out that it means something somewhat different to what the Magi, the astrologers, were expecting. In one sense, they were right about everything. Even their slightly bizarre presence of gold, frankincense, and myrrh with their cryptic meanings were insightful, to say the least. But they could not have possibly imagined the seismic proportions of the family event they'd stumbled in on and what it all meant. Many years later, another wise man, another religious scholar, who also in his younger days had the ear of the rich and the powerful, also saw a bright light in the sky. This time not at night, but in the middle of the day. So bright was it that it rendered him blind. His name was Saul, who was later renamed the Apostle Paul. And it was this man who ultimately was able to explain, at least to some measure, what the star meant. Our second reading that Ros read to us earlier was from Philippians 2. And I think it's probably the greatest and most moving passage that Paul writes about Jesus. And Paul describes Jesus as both God and man. Now, please understand that he doesn't describe Jesus as a God-man. In the Greek tradition, of course, they had these Greek gods. And they would come down and pretend to be men. Zeus, who was the king of the gods, he came down and seduced a woman who had taken his fancy. So he played at being a man. I guess the modern equivalent of that would be our comic book heroes, so beloved of Hollywood. You know, the likes of Superman and Wonder Woman and Batman and Iron Man and whatever other man. They all pretend to be men, but we know they're not really normal, are they? Because they've got these superpowers. They've got add-on extras that normal people haven't got. So Paul wasn't talking about a God-man, but somebody really normal. Nor was Paul talking about a man-god, like, for instance, Alexander the Great. Alexander the Great succeeded his father Philip at the age of 20 in the year 336 BC. And he quickly made himself master of all Greece. And then he set about a task that was to him quite easy, of conquering the whole of the known world. He died aged 33, and by that time he had succeeded to such an extent that he was regarded as a god, a man god. A man who became divine. Another example is Augustus. Augustus, the Roman emperor at the time of Jesus' birth, he had brought a long-running civil war in the Roman Empire to an end and unified the whole of the Roman Empire. A man of such adept military leadership, a man of such immense organizational skills needed to keep an entire empire together. So it was a natural conclusion to consider that Augustus was a god, a man god. And no doubt the Magi were expecting Jesus to be one of these two, either a god man like the Greek gods or a man god like the emperor. But Paul shows us something altogether different, something utterly foreign to their culture, something actually deeply subversive, frankly rather alarming. Paul shows Jesus to be completely God, very nature God, entirely God's essence. And yet he gave up all his divine advantages and became a human being, totally human. The real thing, not pretending. Flesh and blood. Is it possible to be two things at the same time? To be God and to be man. Is it possible to be two things at the same time? Is it possible to be happy and sad at the same time? I think it is. Is it possible to be a man and to multitask at the same time? No, I don't think it is. But the proposition is before us that God became a man, a real man, born as a baby. Jesus, as a baby, couldn't speak. He cried, despite what the famous carol Away in a Manger says. The second verse says, "The cattle are lowing, the baby awakes, the little Lord Jesus no crying he makes." Well, that's clearly wrong, because babies cry. It's the only way they know how to communicate as a new grandfather. I can assure you that all normal babies cry. And Jesus was a normal baby. Jesus didn't know anything about the world that he had been born into. He didn't even know that he was God. For the first year of his life, he couldn't walk. He wasn't even potty trained. And then thereafter, he had to learn everything. He had to learn that fire was hot. He had to learn to talk. He had to learn to read. He was utterly dependent on his parents for his upbringing. And then, as an adult, Jesus did not conform to the heroic leader, powerful king stereotype. He didn't wield any political power. He didn't command any armies. He never wrote a book. He had no money. He didn't travel more than about 70 miles from the place that he grew up. He rarely mixed with the high-ranking people of his day. He lived a simple life. He never owned his own home. He often stayed as a guest of others, sofa surfing, we call it. He kept the company of ordinary people. He was a wandering preacher like thousands of others that are so quickly forgotten. And he died the death of a common criminal like nameless myriad of people down the ages. And 2,000 years on, over 2 billion people worship him as God. God. Is it possible for someone to be a man and to be God? Philippians 2 goes on. Who, being in very nature God, did not regard his equality with God as something he ought to exploit. Instead, he emptied himself, taking the very nature of a servant, being born in the likeness of humans, and then, having human experience, he humbled himself and became obedient even to death. Yes, even death on a cross. The Magi got only a glimpse of this person born King of the Jews. Unbeknown to them, a star was rising, the like of which the world had never seen. It was prophesied in Numbers 24, a star will come out of Jacob, a scepter will rise out of Israel. This was no Alexander the Great. This was no mere Greek god. This was no trumped up Emperor Augustus. This was Jesus. Do you see him? Philippians 2 goes on. And so God exalted him to the highest place and gave him the name that is above every name, that at the name of Jesus, every knee should bow in heaven and on earth and under the earth, and every tongue acknowledge that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of the Father. There is a moment in the film Men in Black that illustrates this. I bet you weren't expecting me to say that. The Men in Black is that kind of wacky film in which aliens are living with us on Earth in disguise. And there is a moment when it is revealed that the galaxy is actually the size of a marble and is inside a bauble hanging as a pendant around the neck of a cat called Orion. And then Frank the Pug, who is an alien disguised as a dog, says to Kay and to Jay, he says, You humans, when will you learn size doesn't matter? Just because something is important, it doesn't mean it's not very small. That's it, you see. That's it. Frank the Pug has got it. Except the truth about Jesus is even more extreme. The biggest, the greatest, the most significant thing in all creation, even being beyond creation because he was before creation, becomes a tiny baby in a manger.